Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat. And welcome. Welcome back to all of our audience. I have not been recording or posting videos or interviews with our industry leaders for the past few weeks, for the reason is that I took vacation. I hope everybody gets the chance to take vacation, recharged a little bit, take a rest, and then come back fully energized like I am with a cold bug. Energized and a cold bug. That's interesting. Let's get started here. So today I'm happy to be joined by Shaheen Samavati. Shaheen is the co-founder and a CEO of Vera Content, a company that is specialized in global content marketing that is based in Madrid in Spain. And this is where Shaheen is located right now, in Malaga, Spain. And I just came back from Spain, where I spent my vacation in Mallorca. Lovely place. And I was looking forward to speaking to you, Shaheen, because first I would like to introduce the audience to what you do. But before we do that, I would like to introduce the audience to who you are. If you don't mind, welcome to the channel. Welcome to our episode number 83. And please introduce yourself to the audience. The floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So, like you said, my name is Shaheen Samavati, and I am CEO of Vera Content. My normal spiel, I'm so used to just going into what Vera Content does, but I guess to tell you about myself personally, so I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio area, and my mom's whole side of the family's from there. My father's from Iran, and I moved to Spain when I was, so my background's in journalism. I was working in journalism in the US. I moved to Spain back in 2010 now. I've been in Spain for 14 years. And I originally came here to do an MBA. I had the opportunity to work in Spain afterwards. So I worked in corporate communication in Malaga. And I've been living in Malaga in between Malaga and Madrid, basically, since then. And I started my agency, Vera Content, back in 2016. And I can tell you a bit about that if you'd like to.
So tell me, how do you like living in Spain? I mean, from the United States to Spain, that's a big move.
Yeah, I love Spain. I'd actually never been here before I moved here. So, but it was a good choice. I just knew I wanted to study abroad. I had never done study abroad in undergrad. So I wanted to do a master abroad and was researching different programs, found one in Spain, had never been to Spain, and got here and haven't left. So.
So tell me, everybody asked the question, right? So I'm going to ask the obvious question before we get into, Vera Content for a second here. What drove you to establish your own company? You said you were in journalism. You did an MBA in journalism. You worked for other companies, obviously. So what pushed you to become an entrepreneur, if I can call it that?
Yeah, I think I always had an interest in entrepreneurship. I wrote about, I was a business journalist in the U.S., so I got to write about business people and entrepreneurs. I actually started a column about called Bright Ideas about new businesses. So I was always interested in that. That's part of why I decided to do an MBA, because I wanted to learn more about business. And although I don't know if I would have ever started my own business if I hadn't moved to Spain, I think that it was like wanting to make my own thing and my own life in Spain was a big motivation for why I ended up starting my own company. And also just working here and seeing the specific need that I was in a particular position to fill at that moment is also what led me to start Vera Content.
So the follow-up question on that would be is, comparatively speaking, how do you feel now in your new role versus what you have been doing before that?
Yeah, well, I've done a lot of things over the years. I kind of fell into localization into the industry, because when I came to Spain, like I said, I was a journalist. After the MBA, I was working in corporate communications and marketing roles. And basically, if you work in those industries, in those areas in Europe, you end up doing localization, because international companies in Europe tend to need to create content in a lot of different languages. So I was basically a marketing manager having to outsource this kind of work to other vendors. And basically, I thought I could do it better. And that's what led me to start my own company. I found it difficult to find an agency to work with that kind of shared the same values I did when it came to quality content production and editorial processes. So that's what I wanted to change. So
one of the things like entrepreneur battles with and or get to experience, and they have not experienced that before, unless in a different capacity you must have done that, is managing people and mm-hmm. being a leader of a group of people that they work for you directly.
Yeah.
Tell me about the leadership experience.
Yeah, of course, my role today is like completely changed. I'm not working directly on projects at all anymore. I'm like managing the management team. So, and it's required like taking on a whole new set of skills, and it's a completely different role. So what was the question though?
How do you manage people? Like, tell me about the leadership role. Like, how do you lead people? What's your style? What's your experience in leading people?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would call myself a pretty humble leader. I'm more of like a behind the scenes person. So for me, public speaking even isn't my forte. I'm trying to push myself a little bit more by doing more public speaking. So, but yeah, I think one thing that I think I've learned a lot through my experience in leadership is just how important it is to listen. And like, I think when I first started out, I still think I know more than everyone a lot of the time, but I realized the value of just like stepping back and listening to other people before I propose an idea. So, and actually taking the time. My team's still small enough that I can meet with everyone on the team one-on-one. So I find those like one-on-one interactions like super valuable. That's when I learn the most.
So tell me, how many employees you have at VeraContent?
We're 14 on the team, on our core team. And that's like our project management team and our sales team. But then we work with freelancers all over the world for the actual delivery of the work.
Of course, like the rest of us in the industry, yeah. You've got an internal core team and then you have freelancers on the outside, which mm-hmm. brings me to the next question. We would love to get to know a little bit about VeraContent. And why did you select the name VeraContent? And if you don't mind telling me a little bit about the company.
Yeah, so Vera comes from the Latin for true. So it was the idea of like true and accurate content. And of course, we wanted to choose a name that was easy to say in different languages, and being based in Spain, that was easy to pronounce in Spanish. Of course, we get some slightly different pronunciations. Americans like to say Vera, actually. I was impressed with your correct pronunciation of our name. So thanks for that. Vera content is how we say it.
So you selected the name, and B, what is VeraContent in a nutshell for those who don't know you as a company? What does the company do, etc.? What else can you tell us about VeraContent?
Yeah, we call ourselves a multilingual content marketing company. So we're specialized in content production for corporate channels, basically blogs and social media websites. So digital content mainly, although we've done other types of marketing content as well, brochures, you name it, ads as well. But really our bread and butter is social media and blog content. So
and it's very interesting because one of the conversation we're having as an industry is, I don't know how deep you're involved in the industry, but I had a conversation with Don DePalma, who's the founder of CSA Research. It's on the channel. You can look it up. And we talk a lot Don talks a lot about the post-localization era. And, you know, having this conversation today where it sounds to me like VeraContent is creating content in target languages. So you guys are not creating content in English and then trying to convert it. It sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. that you create in some cases, maybe not all cases, in some mm-hmm. cases, you're creating content in directly in the target languages. Can we touch on that topic a little bit? What's the difference for you between creating content in English or creating content in the target language immediately?
Yeah, so that's absolutely right. Like the majority of what we do is creating original content in the target languages. Sometimes we have source content in another language that we're adapting, but usually the end result is quite different. So when we take a lot of liberties with it because it's creative content and it needs to be really adapted for the market, depending on the project to some degree or another, the level of adaptation. But definitely with like social media posts, for example, especially now that most social media posts are multimedia, so it means it's not only translating the text, but it's also creating assets for the market. And a lot of that involves really tailoring it, like creating an entirely different asset a lot of the times.
So from I've been in translation, obviously, in the localization industry for the past 21 years. So all I knew really is creating content in one language, then transform it to another language, regardless if it's English or something else. Mm-hmm. And you know, speaking three languages, I can see the difference mm-hmm. between creating content, original content in its original language or target and in intended language, I would say, versus mm-hmm. taking a content and transforming that content into another language. And so from a from your experience, from Vera Content experience so far, and how old is your company now? How long have you been in business?
8 years.
8 years, yeah. Okay. So mm-hmm. based on those 8 years of experience, can you talk a little bit about what is the outcome? What is the customer experience that you're feeling toward original content?
I mean, I definitely see increasing demand for that. Like, I think a lot more marketers are understanding that, like, if you really want to resonate in an international market, it's not enough to just translate something. So you have to go beyond that. And I think when you have a marketing purpose, there's a lot of things to keep in mind with content marketing, like it's in terms of SEO. And like when we're doing SEO content for a blog, it's like we need to adapt that for the SEO terms that would work in the other language. It's not just the translation. A lot of times there are also like factors to take into consideration, like the topic itself might not work in that market. So it needs to be reworked or think of it as an alternative. So, because we do have projects where we basically have a blog in English or in another language, sometimes Spanish, like we have a lot of Spanish clients as well. But, and then we need to adapt that for the other market. So it's like creating the content calendar, oftentimes informed by one calendar that we have in one language, but adapting it. Then we've had other clients who actually want us to do a completely different strategy, different type of blog. Like they just have different marketing initiatives in the different markets. So we're creating content for those. And so it really depends on the goals for each project.
And it sounds like this is where the world is going now, especially specifically for content that is intended for public consumption. And mm-hmm. out of all what you do, blogs, marketing, it's intended to attract. It's intended to bring audience in to traffic to websites or to a product, etc. For those type of sensitive marketing pieces, I'm assuming, and you know, I feel like based on the many conversations that I've had over the past year and a half since I started with this channel, this is where the market is going right now. It sounds to me like this is where we're going. Transforming content, it's always, you know, it feels to me, based on the three languages that I speak, there's something missing. Creating a content in its original format sounds like it's hard hit a lot better than a transformed content. Do you agree?
Well, I think there's still a huge amount of demand and need for what you were calling transformed content, I guess, like straight translations. The thing is that now there's so many tools available that like the amount of effort needed from humans to do it is less. Like it's completely changed the way. So of course, for certain areas of translation, like there's a lot of like need for accuracy. And of course, things have to be checked.
Sure.
But I'd say it's not the same as, yeah, I think there's like more growth opportunity in content creation and multilingual content creation. And that's why really we decided to focus on that.
And what I saw on your website, like one of the things that, you know, every marketer struggles with, and especially those, and I would say the, and I don't know, we'll talk about that in a second here. Especially for those mid-level markets, I would say, you know, the mid-sized companies or small companies, they struggle with consistency in marketing. Marketing is all mm-hmm. about consistency. You know, what is consistent messages that you're putting out there? How many audience are you attracting to those messages? And if you, you know, like I did, you know, go on 3 weeks vacation and come back and don't post anything while you're on vacation, that's a gap. Mm-hmm. That's not supposed to happen. If you are, you know, trying to market product, obviously for me, I'm not marketing a product and it's a personal initiative. I'm trying to balance personal life and personal initiatives at the same time. So for those consistency, and I noticed on your website, you have a program where you take, for instance, a customer and you do like, you know, five posts or X amount of pieces per month, per week, etc. Is mm-hmm. that true? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I totally agree. Like, I think there's clearly over the past more than a decade, there's been a shift towards brands becoming publishers. And now every brand is expected to publish as if they were a magazine or whatever. Like brands used to rely on external publications and publish there mm-hmm. and buy advertising there. Now the model has totally shifted. Thanks to the internet. I mean, this is an old story, but but just for some context, that's like what's brought us to where we are. It's like that it's now every brand has to be a publisher, and they're publishing constantly. And a lot of companies, that's just like not their core competency. And some brands have actually done a fantastic job of like building their internal team, and they're consistently publish, but it requires building an entire department for that. Basically, it's a big job. And of course, if you want to do that in more languages, that's even more. So that's why, obviously, there's an alternative of outsourcing that part of the job, and that's what we do. And of course, we have like super set processes and timelines and tools that we use to keep the content production going. And I think that's the value.
So I believe like what you're based on our conversation today, that if somebody was to do some of the services that approaching some of the services that you guys are offering at Vera Content, mm-hmm. there's two options: either they do it themselves or they get somebody to do it for them, right? And this mm-hmm. is where you guys come in. The key here is, and this is where some of our audience may get a little question mark on this one. Oh, I can download an app and it will do XYZ for me. Why do I need to hire somebody to do it for me? Yeah, you have an option, I would say, right? Everybody got the option of downloading an app. And obviously, there's an app for everything out there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to me a little bit about what's the difference between doing it themselves versus hiring you?
Yeah, I mean, I was saying, if you want to do it yourself, it's basically hiring at least a project management team internally who's going to be the ones dealing with all of the different stakeholders involved in producing the content. And depends. For us, I feel like our kind of like perfect client is a mid-sized company. That's because some of the really big corporates, I mean, they have their internal team, or they have like they have big agencies that they're working with. So, but I feel like, and also like they might be totally happy to have lots of like a very large operation with working with multiple agencies, where I feel like mid-sized companies would prefer to have like one point of contact. So that's really what we offer, is like a one-stop shop, a central point of contact where we are managing projects across multiple markets. So rather than having to work with one agency in Germany and one in Spain and one in Italy, which is what was kind of a lot of companies were doing,
sure,
be able to work with us and we manage that all for you. So
it's that whole outsourcing business case,
mm-hmm.
versus doing it internally and hire your own staff, and it can get a lot expensive because, you know, there's in these types of initiatives, I guess, in these types of products and services, there's a lot more skills required than you can hold in one or two individuals, right? So I'm mm-hmm. assuming that if people go through their mind, I can hire somebody that can do it for me. Well, there's so many different skills that they're required that one individual may be not possible to have all these skills. You may have
A lot of times we will get requests from someone who we tell them like, look, one person could do this. You don't need us to do this for you. Like, that's not really where we add the value. Where we add value is when you do need 20 people working on the project, and we'll manage those 20 people for you. But if you have a project in two languages, that's writing 4 blog posts a month, then you don't necessarily need us for that. It's when it's basically when it's more languages or more volume.
So tell me a little bit about the process. Like in a lot of these cases, when you are working with a certain company, you got to understand their philosophy. You got to understand, you know, there's a lot more to it than just taking the project and assigning it to somebody. There's a lot mm-hmm. of information that needs to be collected at the front end to mm-hmm. set the stage for the project success.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk me through this? Like, how do you understand what the customer hope to achieve, and what the intended goal, and how do you capture all this? Because there's a lot of it. It seems to me, it's in what I call in the ether, meaning mm-hmm. that, you know, I want to sell widgets to this specific demographics, and I want them to buy a lots of it. But first, they need to understand what this widget does and do, and then we need to capture the essence of this so I can create a very fundamentally moving content that can react, that the audience can react to it positively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really important point. Like, that's also something that every new client we work with, we do an onboarding process where, and I should say that we only do long-term projects, because that's something we found. It's like, it takes you months to really get to know the brand. And so it needs to be something that's going to be a long-term commitment of being partners in being kind of their external content creation team. Like, doesn't make sense to oftentimes we're the ones actually creating the brand guidelines and the, you know, the tone of voice and the style that they're going to be using across the channels. And obviously it takes time to develop that. It requires a lot of conversations with the client. So, and it means working really closely hand in hand. So it's something that is developed over time.
So you only focus on long-term contracts, I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And so I know, I mean, we all know there are a lot of other companies that provide the same service. And mm-hmm. I've interviewed a few on my channel as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you had a chance to look them up. But at the same time, you know, the question comes up here, not just for you, but for all of us in the industry. And mm-hmm. I've interviewed many people in our industry, and everybody says, you know, we do XYZ. And I keep asking, so what makes you different?
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you different? Is that a tough question?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what makes us different, I think what I was kind of explaining at the beginning is my coming from a background in journalism, I think our approach is really focused on having this editorial process. And we have our little, what we say, you know, it's our company values spell out the word care. it sounds a bit cheesy, but really it's like, I think it is something that we all live and breathe in the company, is like really paying attention closely to every piece of work that we produce and like taking pride in it, because I think it's so easy to just churn out content. And that's what we really work hard not to do. Like, and a key really that helping us achieve that is the processes, like having multiple check process, because what I found is that what makes people have pride in their work is being able to show it to someone else and that person telling them that they did a good job. Like, and if you don't have that step in the process and you're just like throwing it back to the client, then you're not going to get the same results. It's a really simple thing, but it makes a big difference.
So equality, I'm assuming, and in to encapsulate what you just told us, is the quality of the pieces that you deliver to the customer and the pride associated with creating those pieces of content.
Yeah, but I think like quality is something that's very subjective.
Of course.
So I guess it's like by having conversations around the content that we're producing and actually having interaction on the team to like share the creative ideas, it's like producing things that are actually original and unique, not just kind of cookie cutter content.
Talk to me about your, you know, the customer side of things. Like, what market do you serve? Are you global? Are you local just in Spain? Today we live in a sort of like a digital world. I'm assuming your customers from all over the world. I don't know, but.
Yeah. I mean, we basically work with any company that wants to reach the European market. So we're specialized in creating content for European markets in European languages. Most of our clients are either in Europe or in the US. But yeah, so several of them in Spain, of course, because that's where we're based, but we also have clients in the UK and the US and Germany, other markets as well.
And what's your sales and marketing strategy?
That's a good question. I mean, it's mostly inbound. So, I mean, because we are a content marketing company, we're strong in that. So we pretty much, like the vast majority of our clients have come inbound or through referrals, client referrals and personal contacts.
Do you have a sales team? Do you have a business development team? Is it just word of mouth?
Yeah, we have two account managers on our team who are kind of like responsible for converting new deals, but mostly in inbound deals, basically. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I mean, look, I mean, the best way to sell is doing a good job, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's you don't need a lot of marketing. Back in the days when I was young, I worked for, you know, a company that did marketing, actually a marketing company in Nicosia in Cyprus a long time ago. And I remember this owner used to tell me, we create advertisements for people to, and I don't want to say on the camera what he used to say, but basically he's trying to say to me, we create marketing for things that doesn't market itself, that don't market themselves. And if you do a good job, I guess that's a brand marketing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't want to refer a good supplier nowadays, because everybody's looking for a good supplier, right? Everybody's looking for a good provider of something, whatever is. In your case, it's content marketing. But
yeah. And like I said, we're doing like big long-term contracts. So we're not like selling, I don't know, widgets. So it's all about relationships and the long-term relationships.
But who doesn't want to add another customer? I'm assuming you want to add another customer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're having.
Actually, we've had our best year to date so far this year. So, and we continue to grow and very organically. So,
so let's shift the focus a little bit and talk a little bit about trends.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking on this channel quite a bit about AI.
Mm-hmm.
So do you use AI in your process? And what's your view on AI in general?
Yeah, I think that everyone should be using AI. And if you don't, you're obviously putting yourself in a disadvantage. I think the question, though, is like how you use it and making sure you're using it well and having guidelines for the team to use it responsibly. And I think that is the challenge because it's difficult to actually, even if you say in my company, we don't use AI, people in your company are using AI. You can't stop it. I mean, it's so accessible. It's built into a lot of the tools that we use. So, I mean, everyone is using AI to some degree. But we actually created an AI task force on our team and we've actually been investigating like how we can really use it better. We were already using tools that incorporate AI in some ways, like our translation software has some AI features, like, of course. Of course, specifically how to use generative AI for producing content is something that we've been just implementing recently in terms of making sure we're using best practices. Because, of course, from the project management perspective, giving like, okay, for this project, this is how we're going to use it. And we're all going to share this custom prompt that you should always use this prompt, like not something else, you know? So that we're consistent with the results that we get and also that it's clear what the process is. Once you've used that prompt, what do you need to do next? How do we make sure we get accurate results and
So I'm guessing from what you're telling me is a human in the loop in your case, part of the process. It's in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say like 90% of our projects are still like mostly humans. It's only when it's like so we've only been testing this on like very specific routine content creation projects where it's like, okay, this particular, like we're always doing profiles on people in the company. And so we need to basically take this questionnaire with them and like reformat it into a profile on them. Okay. This kind of thing for reformatting, it works really well. And it saves the team a lot of time just from having to glean through that and choose the information and put it in the right format. Obviously for like research, you have to be careful in terms of like we can use it to like point us in the right direction, but then we need to double check everything that it suggests and ask it for sources and double check those sources. So that's something those different use cases are what we've been working on establishing best practices for.
So do you think like this is the status now, and obviously technology is changing like every day, and what we know this month may not be the same what we know next month. From day to day, things are moving. So where do you think AI eventually will be, and how do you think eventually, and I know we only deal with what we have, so what it is now, but can you project down the road, a few months down the road, a year down the road, where do you think this is going?
Yeah, so I think obviously AI has the potential to kind of make our lives a lot easier in a lot of ways and eliminate tedious tasks. So I'm optimistic that that's going to be the outcome for the most part. Like, and we can only, well, hope for the best and embrace like how AI can help us. So that's my perspective on it. In terms of comparison I like to make is with machine translation. I think a lot of people were afraid of machine translation when it first came on the scene. And now we see like how much easier it makes our jobs as translators, at least if you're doing marketing translations. I think every translator now uses machine translation. It's built into pretty much every CAT tool. It's like doing a lot of the heavy lifting of just like transforming one word into another,
sure.
But then it's leaving the creativity to like, there's still, it's the human who's the one making the final decisions and doing like the most fun part of the job, I would say. So I hope that it's going to be the same with generative AI. It's like, okay, it's helping us save a lot of time making outlines, looking up information, putting things in different formats. But in the end, it leaves us we're the ones who have to put that creative touch on the end and make the final decisions. And so it's that human creativity that's essential, I think, in any content creation project. And that's just going to become more important.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things I talk about on this channel is the technology is available to everybody now. The genie's out of the bottle. and everybody's got access to it. And you're right, you mentioned it earlier, like even if somebody says, you know, we don't use AI, trust me, I've validated this many times. The employees of that somebody is using AI currently, and they don't tell them. It's just the genie's out of the bottle. Like I said, the technology is out there. It's available in everything, and they are using it. We're, you know, I see this as like, you know, when I give a tool, whatever tool it is, to somebody, a sculpture, you give them a tool, they create something nice out of it. They create a statue of sort, and things get a little bit, becomes more of a piece of art. Versus I give a machine translation tool to a unilingual individual who doesn't know this, you know, the target language, and they take things and they put it into machine translation, comes out on the other side and God knows what's in it, and they start using it. And it's sort of scary, because if you don't know what you're doing and you're using these types of tools, it's a double-edged sword. You saved money, you know, the cost is lowered, but you open a whole wide area of risk for you. Quality, public, whatever you want to call it, shaming, I would say, because some of these information could be in the public domain and we don't know. And it comes back and says, you know, how do you use this information out there? It's wrong. Plus, in some cases, embarrassing. We have several incidents, and the internet is full of that. And so how do you, you brought up a very good point, because you are using the tool within the constraint or within the controls of the professional. The professional is using the tool in their own professional way. Mm-hmm. Any advice to those who are unilinguals out there? First, tell them not to use it. But...
I think if you have like even a, I think it is like necessary to understand what you're producing. So it's like, I wouldn't recommend relying on AI to communicate for you in another language outside of like a just for fun use. Obviously for in a professional context, absolutely not. I would say for like a like just communication and being understood, it has a lot of applications. And of course, if you have even like a general notion of the language, like AI can help you communicate a lot better in that language. So that's really cool. Like my husband has a website and he is a Spanish speaker. He speaks really good English, but he writes much better in English now, thanks to AI. So he uses it just to improve his texts. So
it does help the same in the learning process, right? It does help in learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because even for me, like not just on the language side of things, I mean, I've seen myself learn, you know, refresh my learning, I guess, in some cases in certain topics, programming, etc. It's very helpful that way. But you need to have the basic knowledge of the topic. That's my that's my conversation on this one. That's my point.
Yeah, I think it's like you get out kind of what you put in. So like the quality of what you get out is corresponds to the quality of what you put into the tools.
So tell me, now stepping back a little bit, and if you are in a leadership position and you want to, you know, the question would become is, what advice would you give to somebody who is considering their content to go global, besides reaching out to you, but maybe a little bit more in-depth advice, I guess.
For someone who like wants to start localizing their content. Yeah.
So not localizing. I mean, I'm just giving you a scenario. So yeah. I'm a company, I'm located in the US, mm-hmm. I've got products and services, I'm targeting Europe. What the first thing I should do?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of steps, but I'd say basically considering your business strategy, first of all, and like prioritizing which markets you want to reach, because Europe isn't one market. So it's very diverse and very different. Very different approaches are needed in the different markets. So I've actually seen that happen a lot, like companies trying to enter all of Europe at once, and I think that can go wrong. So I would say focus and decide what's your priority and creating a strategy specifically for your most important markets before trying to target the whole continent or the whole world, obviously.
So now that we have the strategy is created, and I am, for instance, based on the strategy, I want to enter Portugal. With my product and services. So what do we do next?
So that's it. I mean, I need more information. This is too hypothetical.
No, I mean, that's fine. I mean, look, I mean, at this stage, I'm selling a car. I want to sell it in Portugal. That's all I have. And my content, everything is done in English.
But
based on strategy, I'm going to go into Portugal. How do I go with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it requires some market research on like specifically who you want to reach in Portugal and what are the best channels. What are the best channels to reach them? You can look at what strategies have worked for you in other markets and see if it makes sense to duplicate that in Portugal. But I think it makes sense to obviously look, depending on the market, might have very different trends in terms of like which platforms are more popular or what channels work.
Well, obviously, there's a lot more in-depth analysis that needs to take place, market research, feasibility of the market, you know, do we have a possibility of selling these widgets, whatever, we're taking them to whatever market. Those questions have been answered.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we are at a place where, you know, I'm almost ready to ship that product, and I need my user manuals, I need my marketing material, I need to advertise, I need to put some content dedicated for that region, I guess this is where the stage we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And for that, I guess I'm assuming you either can recycle what they worked for them in the US mm-hmm. into that market, or create a different content for that specific market. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, like when a client, for example, wants to do a localized social media strategy, like specific to a market, we would start out by doing a series of meetings with them on like to define the basic goals for that market, and then figure out like define the content, the types of content they want to produce, like what's going to be the unique kind of twist they're going to have, and like creating like content types, because I think that's like, if you want to create consistent content, it's like you need to have a really clear plan. So just creating that plan that's in line with the strategy for the market first.
All right. So the shifting a little bit down through our conversation here, the next thing is for me is to ask you, what do you like the audience to know about Vera Content that we have not yet covered here in this conversation? Did I miss anything that you probably would like to bring out? And just to give you an idea, so far, we have about 380,000 views on this channel. So there's a lot of viewers out there. What do you like to tell them?
Ooh, okay. That's some pressure. So, I mean, I think we've covered kind of the basics about what we do at Vera Content. One thing I would just say is like for anyone who's like we're always recruiting, so I'm definitely interested in for any talented writers across Europe to apply with us. So, and we really look for people who have a writer profile, like who have background in journalism or in content creation, but who also have knowledge of languages is a big plus.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm very impressed with the model that you've created. And, you know, since I made contact with you, I've been looking at your company and doing some studying on it. And mm-hmm. I encourage our audience to reach out and find out more about you. Maybe not necessarily, you know, may result in business immediately, but it may be result in business down the road for you, whatever that business is, hiring, attracting another customer. And this is what this channel is about, really, is to bring those stories, those opportunities that these entrepreneurs such as yourself are creating and bring it to the top, bring it to the surface and get people to know about it. And hopefully down the road, somebody says, you know what? I got to get a hold of these guys at Vera Content because I want to talk to them and I've got something useful for them. And this is what this is about.
Yeah, I guess one thing that also occurred to me that I wanted to mention before is that I think one problem that we see a lot of companies facing is that they have been kind of having like disjointed marketing efforts. Like they're in different markets, maybe one distributor is doing one thing, like they have a social media channel there that it's like, and in another you have an intern created an account like 5 years ago and nobody's updated it. So, and I think a lot of times I think a big, like people, like brands come to us because they need help kind of like sorting that all out. I think everyone has realized now like how important social media and content marketing are and how much visibility you can get through that. And people and many marketing directors are saying, okay, wait, we need to take this seriously. We need to get things in order. I think that's a big place where we bring value is like helping brands kind of get a hold on what they're doing in different markets around the world and creating consistency across markets and making sure the brand is really accurately represented in each of those markets.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a very important topic because, you know, if I look at all the companies that I've been talking to and I look at their LinkedIn page or I look at their, you know, YouTube channel, if they have one, I see a lot of gaps in there, right? And and then, you know, we turn around and say, you know, I hear these individuals telling me like, you know, we got to get better at marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get better at marketing, which is fine, but you need to put a plan together, as you were mentioning. And this is where you guys come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, okay. So just coming up to our end of our conversation, which I really appreciate your time. Appreciate the conversation that we're having right now today with me. And I'm glad to have had the opportunity to talk to you and to understand a little bit more about you personally and about your company as well, Vera Content. Any last comments that you'd like to add before we stop the recording?
I think I added my extra comment there. So yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been great.
I really appreciate it, Shaheen. Thanks for joining me. And to for our audience, thank you again for listening in for another episode. And I hope you stay engaged with us. I hope you join our WhatsApp group if you're inclined to join our WhatsApp group where we share thoughts, ideas, etc. And also, I hope you can stay connected with us on all of our content on our YouTube channel, on our podcast channels, etc. So looking forward for another conversation for all of our audience. From myself, Robin Ayoub, and Shaheen Samavadi from Vera Content, thank you for joining me today and look forward for another conversation in the near future. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.